Well, welcome to the Calling Hours podcast. Today we have an exciting guest with us, John LaFront, who is the founder and CEO at Alevia, formerly Damani Care, text-based messaging for funeral providers. I'm really excited to talk to you today, John. I'm so glad that you found time, particularly it is the day before Thanksgiving when we are recording this, and I know it's very, very busy, but I really appreciate you taking some time to chat with us today.
Oh, you bet. This will be awesome. I'm excited to do it.
So, John, we start most of these conversations, we start by talking about people's kind of history and how they ended up in funeral service. I always find those stories to be really interesting. So I would love to hear, how did you end up where you're at today?
Yeah, you know, it is so interesting. And I love the same thing. I love asking people their journeys. Death care is certainly a special place. And so to hear people's kind of origin story is great. And I definitely did not grow up thinking that this would be the profession that I would be in. And I'd even say within college and going to school, I didn't think that that would be the case either. But life, you know, gives you some twists and turns along the way. I got my undergraduate degree in advertising and marketing from Brigham Young University. And I got my master's degree in real estate development, actually, from the University of Utah. And I was a commercial real estate developer in kind of partnership with my father. Also did a lot of custom homes in the greater Park City area. And that was because that was what was in my blood. My dad was a developer. But he passed away in September of 2008 of glioblastoma, brain cancer. You probably paid attention a little bit to that date. 2008 was when the market completely tanked in the real estate world. And I was young, newly married. We had my oldest daughter who was 10 months old at the time and was definitely just rocked and like, what am I doing? Didn't feel capable enough to take over my dad's business and those properties, especially during that economy. And so it was a struggle for a bit. That's when I went over to kind of custom home building, oddly enough, in the Park City area. A lot of people were taking advantage of the market. I had some friends from BYU, and they were multiple friends from different areas, and they were working for a funeral pre-planning company. And I kind of thought that maybe that was because of the recession, and it was like they were just, you know, looking for a gig. But they flew me out to the Northwest. They were located in Portland, and I grew up in Seattle, so I was kind of excited to go back to the Northwest and just check it out. But that was the beginning of kind of my journey. The business itself was kind of intriguing, but I knew right away that I wanted purpose-driven work. I knew that I could help other people. You know, as a result of the loss of my father. But what ended up happening is I ended up just loving the profession so much. And that was what kind of surprised me. I knew I would love helping people that needed help at the time of grief and loss. But what really surprised me is how much I really, really love just the funeral industry at large. It's filled with just horrific people. And so I did that and I've never looked back. It's been awesome ever since.
Yeah, I found that there's no shortage of wonderful people or purpose-driven work in the funeral profession. You'll never get bored if you're looking for those two things. There's an abundance of both of them. Yep. So you transitioned out of that initial experience and you kind of forged your own path and built your own company. I would love to hear about those early days back when, you know, it wasn't called Alevia. Tell me a little bit about the idea and how it got started.
Yeah, so we the idea started probably in 2015 or so. All of our background and experience was in funeral pre-planning. We worked for a large pre-need company. And so that my background and experience was more in marketing and operations. And my business partner, Riley Facer, he was more on the sales side of things. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we saw that there was definitely, well, we helped grow that business pretty considerably over the years that we were there. I was there from 2011 to 2018 and saw tremendous growth, but also saw just tremendous opportunity as we met with funeral home after funeral home after funeral home and talked about a lot of the problems that they were running into and listening to the various, you know, consumers and people in that ecosystem and realizing how they were engaging and what was working and what was not. And so, you know, kind of initial discussions and thoughts kind of came about then, but 2018 was when We ultimately made the leap. The name at the time was just the Domani Group, and it was fully intended to just be a pre-need company, but we wanted to bring new innovation into that. The name Domani, for those that don't know, it's Italian for the word tomorrow. And it's kind of a funny story. You know, both Riley and I served missions for our church, and he served in Italy and I served in Japan. And we were trying to think of fun, creative names for the business. And we loved the concept of tomorrow and making tomorrow better. In Japanese, it's ashita. And in Italian, it was Domani, and that just rolls off the tongue better. So we settled on that one. And but then that began just kind of an interesting evolution that has then, you know, evolved into multiple different businesses over the years. And we've obviously had some name changes recently, et cetera. But that was kind of the origin story and idea behind it, and just using our background to help bring additional innovation into the profession and to use our skills to help more families.
Yeah. I love that. I love that story. And I love the idea of tomorrow, because that, I mean, that's so much of what we do in the funeral profession isn't necessarily just for this moment. There's practicalities, right? You have to do something with the physical remains. You have to do something with that. But what we're really doing is setting people up for what comes after, setting people up for tomorrow. And how are you going to go into this new season and this different world with the tools that you need to navigate your personal grief journey? So I love that. I love that name. I've always loved it. But I want to dig in a little bit to kind of the flagship offering. When you first started the Domani Group, you guys had a really interesting approach to aftercare. And I would love to hear how that came to be.
Yeah, it's interesting. We had one of our initial investors was developing a text message application for businesses. And it was legitimately on day one of the business. We had meetings kind of lined up with people. And I remember sitting there feverishly putting together an aftercare program because we felt like we could lead with aftercare. We felt like it was a strong suit for both of us. And it was very cost effective from a marketing standpoint, because those contacts you didn't have to pay for to nurture along a pre-need path. So we thought, okay, let's lean into that. I feverishly put together a series of multiple text messages, and I was able to automate those so that when we went to the meeting, we had them text in a word and then the messages came up. So it was legitimately on day one of the business. And that was honestly and true when we knew that we were on to something. It was so well received in that initial meeting, and then it just kind of evolved. But the thing that's so fascinating about it is that the core of the offering and the approach and kind of the methodology behind it has not changed drastically over the years. It's really been kind of the same ever since then. And so I think that just showed that our intuition was right in both the medium in which we chose to communicate, but also the message and then the cadence. And it has grown to almost a million people that we've dialogued with since that day.
Text messaging is such an interesting medium in this space. I think there's a whole spectrum of tech comfort in the funeral space. You'll get a broad range, right? You have funeral providers that are, you know, early adopters, and they love it and they're ready to try anything and they're absolutely here for it. And then you have the other end of the spectrum that may not be as comfortable texting grieving families. That may feel a little bit different and strange to them. I imagine that you have had conversations with the whole spectrum. But in those early days, when you were first rolling out this text-based platform, this way of interacting and caring for families after their loss, what were some of those initial reactions?
Oh, yeah. So that is interesting. And it was either they were 100% on board and they got it, or they were 100% against it. And I think with all the love and respect in the world that I have for our profession, that doesn't really surprise me. We tend to sometimes like stay in the comfort of what we've always done before. And so it was hard for some people to kind of adapt to it, but the results at the end of the day didn't lie. But yeah, some of the initial reaction was definitely, that's so impersonal or spammy or juvenile was, you know, they just, it didn't feel professional to them. At first glance, I think that sometimes you have funeral professionals that want everything to be more formal in nature and a little bit old school. And so, yeah, it was one or the other, but we quickly found kind of those progressive early adopter types. They got it, grabbed a hold of it. And because the results were so astounding from the get-go, even it was interesting. We've always kind of done demos where I can show the messages on a screen, on a slide, on a pamphlet, on a PDF, but to see them on your phone almost with your name is where the magic happens every time, because all of a sudden you go, oh, I get that. Like, I understand when I get a meaningful message in my text message inbox, and we all get those, whether we have the contact saved in our phone or not. But when you see your name, and then you see other details that kind of resonate with you, it draws you in. And then when you realize that that first message doesn't even ask a question, it's just simply reaching out to show that you care, is when it kind of just, people get it at that point. And yeah. Again, the results just, they don't lie. It's been astounding.
Well, I think back to like just different technology that we've played around with in the space. I don't know if you remember Pokemon Go. Do you remember when this was like a huge thing? It had a minute for like 6 weeks. It was all anyone was talking about. And I remember at the time reading articles where people are like, how do you leverage this in the funeral space? Like, how do you like, I don't remember what they were called, but like you could attract different people in like the cemetery, drop a bomb there and have people come, like a metaphorical bomb, whatever it's called in the Pokemon Go universe. And I remember at the time feeling like this just feels really icky. Right. But I never felt that way about what you guys do. And I think that the difference is that this isn't a kitschy medium. This isn't a short-term medium. This is how people communicate in the real world. I mean, everyone is on their phones. Those text messages are read within like 60 to 90 seconds. Like this is how we interact. And I think the big differentiator for you guys that you've really done such a phenomenal job with bringing that warmth and that human connection is that you use real people. And you give it a name. You know, by and large, these funeral homes are using Elizabeth as their text responder. And the families don't realize that they're texting with Olivia. They think they're texting with Elizabeth, who works at their local funeral home, who's just checking in to see how they're doing. And it's just such a beautifully thought out process that I think it makes the medium not so much important as it is just those connection points that you're able to foster through it.
Yeah. You know, it is interesting. And that was always at the core too, is we wanted to infuse technology, but never replace the human side. And this was a way to amplify that and do it kind of at larger scale, but have the impact. The other thing that was really surprising, even to me, with the medium of text messaging though, is, and it makes sense, if you put yourself in the shoes of the bereaved, sometimes they don't want to even get out of their house. You know, they don't want to go talk to somebody or go, you know, meet at the funeral home or, you know, and the text message, that was what was fascinating, was the number of people that would start dialoguing with us late at night, or that would send us pictures of their home improvement renovations that they're doing to occupy their time while they were feeling alone and isolated. It is the best medium for that audience, I think, because it is personal. You don't share your text message line with just anybody, and you're not just texting constantly with random strangers, right? It is the people that are close to you that do care about you, generally speaking, and the ability to be able to send even, messages or emojis or whatever, just actually, it makes it so perfect, I think, for that audience.
Yeah, I think there's some sort of emotional reaction when you look at your phone and you see the name of someone you care about that's messaging you. And when that's someone from the funeral home, that brings that kind of brand loyalty, that connection to that brand gets even stronger. And I think that it's such a kind medium for people who are grieving, because it's entirely on their own schedule. You know, if you're calling someone, they either have to pick up the phone or they don't have the opportunity to talk to you. But a text message, they can read it, they can step away, and they can message 3 hours later when they are at home after dinner and no one's there and they just want close connection. So it's such a thoughtful way of giving them the keys. You know, you're in the driver's seat of how you want to navigate this, and we're here whenever you need us.
You're absolutely right.
You talk a lot when you talk about Olivia, you know, you've got all of these different touch points for the first year after a loss, you know, the anniversaries, the birthdays, all these different things. But you also talk a lot about the importance of online reputation management and how Olivia can help funeral homes with that. I would love it if you could kind of dig into why Google reviews in particular are so powerful for funeral homes and why that you've made that such a big piece of what Olivia does for your partners.
Yeah. You know, that was an awesome enhancement. You know, I tell people often with Olivia, you know, you kind of have two different customers in our mind, right? It's like we have the families that the funeral home serves, but we also have our funeral home partners. And ultimately, we want to help both. And if we help both with solving the problems that they have, then we, of course, win and do a great job as a business. And reviews was one that we saw was a massive problem, certainly in 2018. It still can be. And it makes sense, right? It's like, it's a terribly awkward ask. When are you going to ask somebody for that? At the arrangement conference? No, that's not appropriate. Are you going to tell everyone at the close of the funeral, hey, if you thought this was a good funeral, if you could please leave us a 5-star review on Google, that would be great. You know, that would be totally inappropriate. So that was a challenge. And as a result, I was seeing awesome, incredible firms. I knew they were incredible firms that had a 3.2 star rating. And the reason for that was because they weren't proactive in asking, it was only getting the small little handful that maybe had a bad experience. And that doesn't mean that the firm was doing a bad job. It's just the general nature of being human and having a business. You're going to have some bad reviews that come periodically, but also realizing that that's a great opportunity. But you know, we knew that text messaging was a very easy way to do it, and finding the right time, it's kind of the right time and the right place to ask. And text messaging makes very logical sense because you can do it quickly. That is our behavior anyways, because we get those reminders sometimes from other businesses. So that makes sense. But then it was more of like, okay, how far after the death should we do that? Where it is appropriate. And we don't lead with the review. We give as much value as we can first and make sure that they are fully satisfied before we then ask them for that. And that's what's yielded incredible results for our funeral home. So it was a pain point. They needed to do it. And kind of to your question of why do they need to do it? We live in a very transient world. It's kind of, you know, gone are the days where people live in the same town that they grew up in and that they've been in for generations. The average person in America now moves 11 times in their lifetime. And so because of that, they may not have strong affiliation with a funeral home when a death occurs. And what is our nature with anything when you're looking for a location for anything? It is to go to Google, right? You're going to Google a restaurant, a movie theater, you know, an auto shop, a dentist, an orthodontist, and yes, even a funeral home, if that is what you need. And so it's absolutely imperative that we look at that and we help with that. And it was such a major pain point in the profession when I was just seeing numerous really 5-star funeral homes that were sitting at, you know, 3 stars, and we knew that we needed to help with that.
Yeah, it's so important. And I know that it's something like 70% of consumers, if they're asked to do a review by a brand, will say yes. Yes, I will do that. And when you think about the number of consumers who have positive experiences, if your Google score isn't representative of that volume, you're telling the wrong story, you know? And I think it's so important that funeral providers take a look at that, that they are aware of where they're sitting. I love, I'll give you full credit for this joke, even though it's not a particularly good joke, but I've heard you say that, you know, you can't cremate a bad review, but you can certainly bury one with a flood of good reviews. And you at Olivia have certainly had incredible success with the ways that you've been able to elevate the online presence and the reputation management for the partner firms that you work with. And it is. It's just so important. Anytime someone is going and they're making a purchase that is not a frequent purchase, whether they're geographically in a space they don't fill very often, or it's just how many times in your life do you have to find a funeral provider? You go to Google, and half the time you're going to trust those Google reviews more than you're going to trust recommendations from friends or family. So it's so, so important that funeral providers are taking a good look at that. Well, I want to talk a little bit about some new and exciting things you've been doing at Olevia. You guys have been very busy this fall. You've announced recently we are all at NFDA in New Orleans, and you guys rolled out some new features. And I want to talk about all of them because they're all very exciting. But I want to start with your recent integration with Alex Estate Settlement Services. What is it about them and that partnership that is the most beneficial to funeral providers and the families they're serving?
Yeah. Ooh. You know, estate settlement has been a little bit of an evolutionary journey. It's been something I've looked at for several years, knowing that it was important because we listen to the voice of the consumer via the text. And so we do see fairly often people asking questions that are estate settlement related. And there has been a flurry of a lot of estate settlement solutions that have come to market over the last several years, several out of Canada, oddly enough. And we've met with all of them. And I think that there are a lot of them that do a nice job. The biggest differentiator with Alex is just like Olevia, technology company, but it's human first, you know, and it's powered by humans. Alex is the same. So they have remarkable technology that's able to pool incredible data and information as it relates to the estate with the ability to, you know, to have checklists and to get those things accomplished. But it also is human assisted through that process. And that was what was so important and really the biggest differentiator between the other estate settlement businesses that were out there. And then on top of that, and this is really important, I think, you know, just thinking about the profession, we're a relationship business. And just like we love all of our partnerships and connections within the homesteaders realm, you know, our relationship with the Alex team just hit off really, really strong. That makes a difference. It kind of makes doing business more fun. You want to solve problems at a more rapid, you know, rate when you're working with people that give you energy and don't do the opposite of that. And I'm not saying that the other, you know, companies that are out there did that per se, but there was just something really special about the Alex team. And I think a lot of people even felt that at NFDA, we had them in our booth and they just really felt like an extension of our team too. And so because of that, there's just been some kind of special magic there.
Yeah. I think that is absolutely important. And I mean, you know, this at Homesteaders, we've had a year of a lot of really big new partnerships and the chemistry between the leadership teams really makes a difference. Yeah. When you're looking at people that you're going to tackle mountains with, you know, you want people that are going to get in the arena with you, people that are going to be alongside you, that give you that energy, that match your enthusiasm, that are equally purpose-driven. And I'm so glad that you have that with Alex. I'm really impressed with their service offering. And I love that everyone who gets the connections through Olevia is going to get the value of that. I think that's such a great addition. That's one of the things I think is really interesting about the Olevia platform that doesn't get talked about a lot is how much consumer data you're able to collect. And more qualitative, like they're asking for this kind of resource. Okay, let's go find that kind of resource. You also, at NFDA, you talked about another offering you're now integrating with Qualtrics, which is also kind of a leader in consumer data. Tell me a little bit about how that works and how that elevates the service.
Yeah, you know, and there will probably be a lot more information coming on Qualtrics. Qualtrics, for those that don't know, I mean, they are the world leader in experience management. They were founded kind of here in our backyard in Utah. So I have a lot of friends and connections that work with Qualtrics, and I've kind of seen them grow. I first met with Qualtrics back in 2019 to explore the possibility to do that. And at that time, it was not cost prohibitive for us to build it and integrate it into our model. We didn't have enough scale to be able to do that. And we still had a lot of building that needed to happen with our systems and processes. But I have just always been thoroughly impressed with them. I go to their experience management conference every year in Salt Lake. They are leaders in that space. And so I have learned a lot about just the consumer experience and how important that is from Qualtrics. So just on that side note, I'm really, really thoroughly impressed with the company and the solutions that they bring to the table. And, you know, it's like with anything, you can build or you can partner, you know, with other groups. And it was very clear to me that I didn't want to build a replica of what Qualtrics was doing, but I wanted all of the benefits of Qualtrics to come into our profession. The reason for that definitely is the data and the insights and the knowledge that can come from that. And as AI has entered the scene pretty strongly, they are on the forefront of that too, of being able to take the data to give key insights into what the consumers are thinking and feeling. And I think that every industry is impacted by that, but our profession, because again, with all the love in the world, is a little slower at times. We need tools to be able to help us give us those insights faster so that we don't miss the opportunity to serve the families in the way they want to be served. And I think that sometimes we can be reactionary and we can jump really quickly into things. One example for me and my observation is kind of the direct cremation movement. And it's not that that cremation is the problem, but direct cremation takes out services completely. And yes, people can plan their own, but oftentimes people don't and they neglect it and they push it to the side. And we lose the value of funeral service as we like rushed really quickly to the lower price point. I feel like with knowledge that can come from those insights in the form of surveys and analysis of text messages, et cetera, those insights will help us make more calculated decisions and we'll do it in a data-driven way so that we're getting those insights and letting the data kind of drive that. That's just, it's crucial. It's good business. And I think that on an individual location basis, a funeral home would not partner with Qualtrics and build out their own experience management platform. It wouldn't happen. I know that. And so if we can help build that and integrate that into our system, it's going to be very hands off for them, but the data and the insights are going to be there at their fingertips within their partner portal so that they can then make the decisions that they need to moving forward. And that I think is really special. And I think it would only be possible with the scale that we've been able to achieve that we could be able to integrate that fully into our program and actually not have it, increase their price. And that is just insane value. So the timing was finally right. And I'm just so excited to see how that's going to help funeral homeowners. I really have high belief that it's going to be game changing.
One of the things we talk about in the funeral space is just the importance of hospitality. And a big piece of hospitality is not reacting to needs, but anticipating needs. And I think one of the things that Qualtrics has the potential to do because of some of that kind of AI-driven learning is to identify when a family is likely to need X and have the funeral home equipped to be able to offer X a day before that point or on that point. Sure. And that, I think, changes the experience for consumers because now they're working with a funeral provider who understands what their grief journey is going to be, is anticipating their needs, and is meeting those needs before they even need to ask. Yeah. And that is a completely different experience than someone who's calling the funeral home and like, I need more death certificates. How do I, like, yeah. It's a much warmer and deeper experience, I think, for the consumer. So I'm excited for that integration.
And it's really interesting too, when you think of just listening to that consumer and making a pivot, like, and we'll talk about For Grief, I imagine, here shortly, but you know, that where did For Grief come about? It was because we had over 30% of the people that responded in asked for grief resources. We realized that funeral homes didn't have many, if any, in some cases. And so a solution is able to emerge to say, how can I meet the needs of this population set? Same thing with the state settlement, right? And, you know, we also did surveys after we do For Grief Speakers Bureau events, and we did this for one of our very large partners. And we did a follow-up survey at the end of the event. And one of the questions we asked was, where do you think you should receive grief resources, or from whom should you receive grief resources from? And we listed out, you know, there were like 10 different options. And the number one at 65% was funeral homes. Mm-hmm. Okay, knowledge is power. If the consumer feels it's the responsibility of the funeral home to provide best in class grief resources for them, and they're not doing it, then they need to get on top of that. Otherwise, they're providing a subpar experience, which will then equate to negative reviews, which then means less market opportunity, et cetera. So it's listening and then acting on the right things based on what the consumers are telling you. And then, those solutions can emerge. And so I feel like we're also just on the forefront doing that on behalf of the partners as well, saying, all right, we're hearing this. This is a theme. We're working on it and we're going to help you with this. But they also will be able to do the same thing because they'll have insights in their at-need arrangements, et cetera, that are going to emerge. So we really want to partner with them, but we want to give them that data to help drive their decision making.
Yeah, let's talk about Forgrief. I heard a rumor
Yeah.
that the idea for Forgrief came from a baseball game. Is that true?
It is absolutely true. I think it's like one of the coolest parts of my entrepreneurial journey ever. It was a World Series, the longest World Series game in history. It was 18 innings and it went on to the next day. And it was
Wow.
Dodgers, Red Sox.
How do you even begin to carb up for a game like that? Like, I feel like there's not enough pasta in the world for that.
I mean, well, yeah, there were lots of Dodger dogs. I had that was
I'm
my
sure,
first
yeah.
time eating one of those. But
Were
yeah,
you actually at the game?
Oh yeah, I was at the game. I was on the first baseline with
Wow.
a group of entrepreneurs.
Okay.
It was a small group. I was sitting next to the founder of Ancestry.com, which is a massive
Okay.
business. I was sitting next to some other folks that were kind of in the therapy world and doing more kind of online-based therapy solutions. And we were sitting there talking, and as entrepreneurs do, you're constantly creatively problem solving.
Yeah.
Well, some of it stemmed from my own personal experience with loss. I didn't get great grief resources, and it took me about 5 years before I ever saw a therapist after the loss of my dad. So there was my own personal experience saying, we've got to do something better here. Like, I get it. It's hard to find help and resources, even with Google, because it just is overwhelming. It's daunting. And if you've never been to therapy before, if you've never gotten help in that regard, it's a very foreign experience and kind of intimidating. And I think for men especially, yeah, men sometimes like to just hide their emotions and their feelings, and they
Yeah,
don't want to
there's a
address them.
stigma to around it,
What's
fair
that?
or unfair. Appropriate to call it out that there are gender differences in the way
Of
that we approach
course.
therapy.
Yeah, I'm not ashamed of that. It absolutely is true. And so I really wanted to speed that up, but then it's almost like seeing it sent on those text messages where people were asking, and then going to the funeral homes and saying, we're representatives of you. What do you have? And the first person says, we have some pamphlets that they can come pick up. And I'm like, you're kidding me. And I thought, that's got to be an outlier. But then the second funeral home gave me a link to a government website that had all the therapists in the state and said, have them pick one. It just was so mind-boggling because I was just like those 65% consumers that I just talked about that felt like that was the responsibility of the funeral home to bare minimum get me on the right track. But our family, it was like, boom, the funeral happens and it was a great experience. And then, it just crashes. And there
Amazing.
were no resources, just none. We were in this massive abyss of trying to navigate that. And so the heartstrings just tugged on me. And that was where the ideas started flowing for grief. But I joke that that game needed to go on for 18 innings so that I could keep vetting it all out in my mind. And it was great to have those other entrepreneurs kind of, bounce also ideas and validate kind of some of the thoughts before For Grief was launched. So
I'm not at all surprised to hear that you were in a group of entrepreneurs kind of bouncing ideas off of people, because I think one of the things that I've noticed about you is that you are an idea generator, but then you're also a really good networker. It seems like every time I talk to you, you're presenting at a different conference or at this industry event or going to visit this funeral home. You're really adept at building those connections and kind of maintaining this network of relationships. I've noticed, I grew up in the funeral profession. I've been at homesteaders for a decade, and I know objectively relationships really matter in this business. I would love to hear your perspective on that. Is that intentional? Is that just natural for you? What have you observed in terms of networking and relationship building in the profession?
I love that you're asking this. It's deeply meaningful to me. And it's 100% natural. and not like strategic or calculated, if that makes sense. I think some people may do things in that way, but for me, it's, I don't know, it's life to have relationships. I have just been so blessed by so many relationships as well. It's important for me and the type of, you know, employees we work with. Yeah, partnerships are really, really huge. And even outside the profession, that's there. But it just comes naturally, I think, out of curiosity, but this desire for human connection. I think I've also been an advocate for the complexities with relationships in the modern era here, where we feel more connected than ever as it relates to social media, text messaging, email, Zoom, whatever the case may be. Yet we also have never felt more distant. And I think in business relationships too, I mean, you know, I'm on the road quite frequently at a conference or presenting or showing up for a friend in the space that needs help and a voice, but magic happens there. I just think that when you have good people that want to come together and solve amazing problems that help people, like that's what gives me so much life. And so I'll move heaven and earth for the opportunity to do that. I'll get on a plane. I'll have sleepless nights because there's just nothing more meaningful to me than that. And then when you see those ideas actually meet and have fruition evolve from that, and then you see the impact, it's just one of the biggest joys and like thrills of my life. And I always kind of wonder, was that the last one? I probably have this like fear that magic won't happen again, but I'm constantly blown away by the opportunities that come, you know, through the magic of just human connection. It's really pretty incredible.
You know, I've heard people talk about entrepreneurs and their businesses as kind of an extension of themselves. And I think you can make a pretty clear argument that Olivia represents the best part of that in you, that mm-hmm. drive for human connection, that desire to build relationships and meet people where they're at and meet those needs. And so I'm not surprised that that's part of who you are, because I think it's very clear that yeah. is the core of Olivia. That's what they do for funeral homes. That's certainly what they do for families. It's doing a lot of good in the yeah. world.
I know. It's kind of cool.
Well, we are going to wrap up with the two questions we ask of every single podcast guest. The first one, because I'm a book nerd, I ask this question of everyone. Yeah. What are you reading right now?
What am I reading right now? So I'm a funny person. Not funny. It's my genre of choice. I love reading about amazing people. That is how I learn and am inspired. And so I love biographies and autobiographies of terrific people. So the one that's on my audiobook is the biography of Elon Musk. And so that's the one that is there. It's a longer read. It's the same author that wrote about Steve Jobs. I read that at the beginning of my entrepreneurial journey, but I would carry it with me on the planes and everything else. And I'm weird. I like listening in my ear and reading simultaneously, so that when I get ADD and I can't read, I keep the story going. So, and I'm nothing like Elon Musk in many ways. But, you know, it's great to humanize a person like that and to mm-hmm. learn more about them, their upbringing, what made them who they are. But the other one that I just picked up was The Comfort Crisis. Mm-hmm. And that one is more application based. It's really cool. It has the concept of kintsugi. Are you familiar with what that
no,
is?
No.
Japanese pottery, but it's broken pottery that then is put back together. And you'll often see it welded together with like gold, and it is beautiful. And I served in my mission in Japan, so, you know, Japanese stuff really jives with me. But the whole concept is to get uncomfortable, and that in the discomfort of life is actually where joy and growth is found on its deepest level. And so it really challenges you to find opportunities to get uncomfortable, so that you can continue to grow and find that. And so anyways, it's a really interesting thing. And I think as we're in November going into December, I always like thinking, all right, next year, what am I going to do to get me uncomfortable so that I can mm-hmm. continue to accomplish things that I want to in the world? It keeps me stimulated. So,
I remember this is years ago when I was interviewing for my first job at Homesteaders. I was with the then VP of HR. She retired a couple of years ago, but she asked me why I was leaving my current position because I was happy there. And I was like, I'm at the age where I know that the most dangerous position I can have is a comfortable one where I'm content, and that's exactly where I'm at. I need to be stretched. I need to be uncomfortable. I need to be challenged. And boy, have I been at Homesteaders. But I love that perspective, the idea of getting uncomfortable. What was that pottery called again?
Kintsugi.
Kintsugi. I'm gonna have to look that up.
It's kind of a game-changing concept. I love the concept of just being broken because I think we all are to a certain extent. We have various traumas and heartaches and sadness, and but that you can actually take that and still beautifully craft an amazing life. And I think it really resonates to me with loss and with death too. When that happens, a person feels shattered, don't they? But my hope is that through the solutions that we bring to the table, that we're actually helping them rebuild kind of that pottery for themselves as well, and then take that beauty back into the world. I really think that there's a powerful meaning there.
I love that. All right, last question. What is giving you energy right now?
I'm a very unique specimen. What is giving me energy right now? I love musical theater, and I get so crazy inspired by it. Like my wife always is like, where did that, like we just saw, I was in LA for the Endwell conference and my wife came with me and we went to go see Back to the Future. And I'm like, you would think, oh yeah, it's a fun little like reflection on the 1980s classic. But I'm like, I'm able to draw deep meaning even behind Marty and Doc's storyline. But we went and saw Wicked last night. I also have, so I draw inspiration from that, but then I love writing. And so I have been, that's like my hobby. It does give me energy to express myself in the written word. I can be way too long form sometimes. So it's I don't know, it's a funny little journey that I'm on, but I love for hobby doing that. So like I recently wrote an article on Wicked and some of the insights that I think a lot of people haven't thought of before. And I'm publishing them on the Medium, application just for fun. And it's crazy. I'm learning how to use TikTok, and I posted my article screenshots on TikTok. And as of like this morning, let's see where I'm at. This is a fun fact for you. 90,000 views of my Wicked article.
Without any of the TikTok dance moves.
No TikTok dance moves, and I've only
Well,
had the account for a
think
few
of where
months.
you could go if you incorporated
I'm
some.
like, hey, if I can go put my creative energy out in the world and people like it even on TikTok, then
That's
it's
great.
very different from my normal day-to-day life. So it's kind of fun to just put things out there sometimes. So kind of fun.
I love that for you. That might be the most unique answer I've ever received for that question. So you get bonus points for that. Well, John, thank you so much for your time during a very busy week, a very busy season for you guys. I enjoyed our conversation, and I'm hoping our listeners also have some things that they can take forward with it. I think there was some richness and some nuggets from you today. So thank you so much for that.
You bet. Thank you, Danielle. I always appreciate talking to you and just talking shop. It's been so fun. Thank you for having me on.